This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to retell the greatest American story ever told. That would be the story of Abraham Lincoln. We are considering in this special broadcast the miracles and mysteries of Lincoln. Right now, taking a look at how this guy, who was about the most unlikely person you could imagine, a political loser with very limited experience, became president of the United States, part of our special program, The Real Lincoln. The music of his campaign song that took him to the presidency in 1860, Lincoln and Liberty. That wasn't the secret, not by itself, though it helped. Lincoln, when we were left him last, was a 21-year-old, a just turned 22-year-old young man, who had struck out on his own, left behind his father and his stepmother and what was left of his extended family, and left them behind to strike out on his own in Illinois. And one of the reasons that he had done it in the way that he did was he was very aware that under the law, all the work that he did before his 21st birthday, the money was supposed to go to his father. And Lincoln was very good about that. When he was splitting rails or working on a flatboat or taking trips down to New Orleans, the money went to his dad, to Thomas Lincoln. But now, 22, 1831, he walked off on his own into the Illinois wilderness and then into the town of New Salem, Illinois. It's about 20 miles from Springfield. It was a bustling metropolis of 25 families. No, really, 25 families when Lincoln arrived. And how, in the course of 30 years, did he go from arriving in New Salem, Illinois, penniless, friendless, as he put, and he put it in his own recollections, strange. This is a point that David Von Vreeli makes in his excellent book, Rise to Greatness, about Lincoln's greatest year, 1862. Lincoln could be the only major political leader who would ever describe himself at any time as strange. But he was. He was certainly a strange candidate for president of the United States, if you think about it. Here was a guy who ran for the state legislature, lost. Ran for Congress, lost. Ran for Congress again, lost. Got elected one term to Congress, then was so unpopular that he didn't even run for re-election, left politics, then came back, ran for the U.S. Senate, lost. Ran for the vice presidency, lost. Ran for the U.S. Senate again, lost. And then gets nominated president of the United States? How did that happen? Could it be because of his incredible good looks and charisma? Actually, he was regularly described, even by some of his supporters, as the homeliest man you ever saw. There is a story that when his wife met him for the first time, Mary Todd, she said to friends, "Mr. Lincoln is to be president of the United States someday. If I had not thought so, I would not have married him, for you can see he is not pretty." He was also not particularly careful about his dress, to say the least. One of the things that people noticed, even much later in life, after he became a member of the United States Congress very briefly, his clothes were a mess. He couldn't afford decent clothes. Very frequently, people would see him speaking in a political context, and there would be whole inches of his shins that would be visible in between the end of his pants, which were always too short because he was such a tall guy, and the top of his shoes. He used to wear what were called Conestoga shoes, which were very, very crude, ill-fitting, must have been terribly uncomfortable. And they were, well, I guess people would call them work shoes today. His clothes didn't fit. He didn't dress well. He was disorganized. In fact, his law partner, Billy Herndon, said he had no system, no order. He did not keep a clerk. He had neither library nor index nor cash book. When he made notes, he would throw them into a drawer, put them in his vest pocket, or into his hat. But in the inner man, symmetry and method prevailed. He did not need an orderly office, did not need pen and ink, because his workshop was in his head. Yeah, but nobody else could see that. By the way, he did stuff notes in the brim of his hat. He would take the lining of his hat and stick the notes inside his famous stovepipe hat. And people know, I think, the great story, which has the advantage of being true, that he wrote the Gettysburg Address on the back of a discarded envelope, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. He did write all of his material himself. So how is it that someone like this, about as unlikely a candidate as you can imagine. I mean, there's some people where you think, wow, this guy is going to grow up to be president. I don't think anyone could have even begun to imagine that about Abraham Lincoln, who arrives in New Salem, Illinois at age 22. At the time that he arrived, the reason he left his father more than any other, the biographers agree on this, is because he didn't want to be a poor farmer. Like his father and his grandfather and his great-grandfather, what did he want to do? Well, he seemed to be drawn to, no, not law, not yet, to business. When he first came to New Salem, he went to a local storekeeper named Denton Offutt and said, can I help around your store and you'll give me a place to sleep and I'll do chores for you? And he said, sure. And Lincoln began working in the store. The store went out of business, as a lot of frontier stores did. And Lincoln did all kinds of jobs around New Salem. He had already had some experience as a boatman. He built boats. He still did rails. He still chopped rails down. He later got a job as a surveyor. He taught himself to survey because George Washington had done that, and he was interested in that. And he taught himself how to do that from books. He also got a job briefly as a postmaster. One of the reasons he did that was because not only was it a job that paid a few pennies a day, but when you were a postmaster, you could actually read the newspapers as they came in. He loved newspapers his whole life. He liked writing for newspapers later, and that was one of the ways he honed his writing skills. He was interested in the idea of stores rather than farms. And with all of these odd jobs, after Denton Offutt's store went out of business, he had an opportunity with another friend of his who proved to be deeply, deeply unreliable to buy another store. And they did. They put up a lot of money. They borrowed a lot of money is what they put up. And the store, as Lincoln recalled it in his own inimitable way, operated for a while and then it winked out. And his partner disappeared, and he was left holding the bag and what he referred to as the national debt. Now, we have a national debt right now of over $16 trillion. It must have felt like that to the young Abe Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln had a debt of over $1,100, which was a huge amount. That would have represented about 10 years of his life and what he earned. And a lot of people on the frontier, of course, would either leave town, as his partner apparently did. But this is one of the ways that he got his nickname, Honest Abe, is he was resolved to pay off every penny. And by the way, he spent 15 years paying it off and continued to pay it off up until the time he was in Congress and insisted on paying off every penny for his failed business venture. Meanwhile, he also was becoming, as you would in a tiny, tiny town, when you were keeping a store, working at somebody's store, and then running one of your own, you get to know everybody. And so he was urged by some of his friends, and at times he would sleep at different people's homes. This was the frontier. He would come and do chores, and they would provide him with some meals, and apparently he had a pretty good appetite. They would take care of him, and one of the justice of the peace in New Salem, whose name was Bowling Green, really, that was his name, urged young Abraham to run for office for the first time for the state legislature. Now, Illinois was a brand new state. Illinois had become a state in 1818. You're talking about 1831. It had only been a state for 13 years. It had a very limited population. It began with a state population of only 45,000 for the whole state. But running for the state legislature? Well, Lincoln thought that was an interesting idea. He had become popular in part because of a wrestling match and in part because of service in a war, his only real war service, but he said that the only blood that he shed was to mosquitoes. We'll tell you about that and more in this very special broadcast, The Real.
How long should kids have to stay in a dangerous or failing school? In Washington, thousands of kids are assigned to chronically failing schools because they live in the wrong zip code. Michael Medved here for Washington Policy Center. If your child is stuck in a school that isn't helping them fulfill their full potential, shouldn't you have the right to find the educational environment that can? The purpose of public education is to educate children, not to maintain a specific delivery system. Go to fundstudentsfirst.com. Free history show streaming and a download of our daily show ad-free. That's what you get for all of 22 cents a day when you join us as a member, Medhead Plus. This is one of the great deals available to try to enhance appreciation for this greatest nation on God's green earth. Check it out at michaelmedved.com or medvedhistorystore.com.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
And we're probing the mystery this hour of how it is that someone like Abraham Lincoln, who suffered as many political reversals as he did successes, could actually rise to the presidency. What was the secret ingredient that allowed him to do that? The secret ingredient that allowed him to run for office initially, I mean, when he was all of 23 years old, it's extraordinary, in fact. When he ran the first time, he had just arrived in New Salem, but he was intensely popular with people. First of all, he was a new kid on the block.
Secondly, unlike most people in that frontier environment, he had read everything he could get his hands on. He loved the poetry of Robert Burns, the Scottish poet. He had begun reading some law books, apparently, though it never occurred to him that he would be a lawyer. He read Shakespeare. He read the Bible. He loved to read newspapers. And because he loved to read newspapers and he had opinions on everything, that's why some of his friends said, oh, you ought to run for legislature, because you're talking about a frontier community in which a fine young man like that. But there was something else. He was also a good wrestler. And no, he wasn't at all like Jesse Ventura. But what happened here is shortly after he arrived in New Salem, he was a big, big guy, remember. He was 6'4". Just a quarter of an inch below that, actually, 6'3¾", if you want to be precise. A very, very tall guy at a time when the average height was 5'8", 5'7". So Lincoln was challenged fairly soon after he arrived by the local bully whose name was Jack Armstrong. And yes, that was really his name. He had a gang called the Clary Grove Boys, and they kind of were the tough guys in New Salem. And they tried to get this strange kid from Kentucky to a wrestling match, and he agreed to the wrestling match, and apparently the whole town came out to see it because it was in the fall of 1831. He was much taller, about 7 inches taller than Jack Armstrong, but Armstrong was powerful, and he was sneaky, and he was the undisputed champion of the region. They wrestled, and Lincoln won. He won because he had Armstrong in a lock, and then Armstrong pulled away, and that apparently in frontier wrestling rules meant that Lincoln won. And then Lincoln came up, offered his hand to shake, and said, let's call it a draw, and he made a lifelong friend, and he did. And Jack Armstrong was one of his big political supporters. But before he could even get his campaign much underway, he had declared his candidacy for the legislature, there was an Indian war. Chief Black Hawk, who was an elderly chief, led his warriors across the Mississippi and back into Illinois, and they started trying to recruit militia. They recruited a little group of militia from New Salem, and they promptly elected Abraham as captain. And yes, he served in the Black Hawk War. He had signed up for the militia. He served a total of more than a month, but they didn't see any action. They did come at one point across 4 scalped bodies, which sickened Lincoln when he saw them. But they never got involved in real fighting, and he said, the only blood I shed in the Black Hawk War was 2 mosquitoes. But he came home as the captain of militia, and then he had the opportunity to announce his candidacy. And he did so in the newspaper, of course, because he loved newspapers, but he also gave his first speech. They had a gathering, and the gathering was in New Salem in late July, and Lincoln delivered his first ever political address. And I can tell it over to you in its entirety. Here is what Abraham Lincoln said to the assembled multitudes. Fellow citizens, I presume you all know who I am. I am humble Abraham Lincoln. I have been solicited by my friends to become a candidate for the legislature. My politics are short and sweet, like the old woman's dance. I am in favor of a national bank. I am in favor of the internal improvement system and a high protection tariff. These are my sentiments and political principles. If elected, I shall be thankful. If not, it will be all the same. He didn't win. he was virtually unknown in most of the district. But in the precinct that included New Salem, he got 277 out of 300 votes. So he was very encouraged by that, and the next time he ran again, ran a more serious campaign. In the interim, he had been working as in the other store that he had launched, and he had also been working as a postmaster. And next time, when he ran for the legislature, he won.
And he won handily and went down to the state legislature, which at the time met in Vandalia, Illinois. And one of the things that happened is Lincoln got reelected three times. He won four times in a row for the state legislature. And he very quickly became the Whig leader in the state assembly. He was a single guy. He was still a poor guy. He was not yet a lawyer. This is fascinating because for years and years and years, I think a lot of people think that Lincoln was a country lawyer who went into politics. It's not true. He was a politician who decided, as well as I'm doing this kind of thing, I might as well make a few dollars and become a lawyer. And as a matter of fact, when he was admitted to the bar, it was during his term in the legislature, and he joined a law firm together with a local congressman, who was, by the way, a cousin of his future wife. His name was John Todd Stewart. And Lincoln was a dynamo in the legislature, and everyone was impressed with him because he was smart, he was funny, he loved to tell stories, and he worked very hard at the business of the legislature. He had two big things that he concentrated on during his four terms in the legislature. One of them was internal improvements, building roads, building canals, trying to dredge rivers so that there, and he believed that was the right job and responsibility for state government. The other job he had was to move the state capital out of Vandalia, where for a growing state, by the time that he got to the legislature, the state had grown from 45,000 to over 200,000 population of Illinois in just 18 years. And by the time he got to the legislature, he wanted to move the state capital to Springfield. Why? Well, Springfield was in Sangamon County. It was in the same vicinity as his home in New Salem. And he succeeded in that. And as the minority leader in the legislature and someone who was widely respected, he got the entire state center of gravity shifted in his direction. And he was considered a comer. Even though he was a lonely guy and still given to all sorts of intermittent depressions and problems. So how do you get from there to the presidency? The crucial element? Words. And his mastery of the language. How did that make him president? We'll tell you the rest of that story in this special broadcast, The Real Lincoln.
To purchase this special history program, The Real Lincoln, go to MedfordHistoryStore.com.
Whatever the controversies, whatever the surprises in the world around us at the moment, it's important to get some perspective, and no better source of perspective than the history of this great country. At MedvedHistoryStore.com, check out some of the titles we have on offer about the Constitution, about the origins of our tax system, about the history of third parties. Enrich your understanding and appreciation with CDs and MP3 downloads at MedvedHistoryStore.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News Update.
We are preparing for what will likely be an historic snow event.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey on a storm that could dump 2 feet of snow on the region. About 550 flights into and out of Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport have been canceled or delayed today. There's word that a plane carrying 10 people has crashed near the airport in Little Rock, Arkansas. It happened in a big storm carrying winds of more than 40 miles an hour. President Biden's flying home after telling leaders of Eastern Europe it's more important than ever that NATO nations stay together.
Not just for Ukraine, but for the freedom of democracies throughout Europe and around the world.
Before leaving Poland, Biden also said Russia suspending the START nuclear arms treaty is a big mistake. Vladimir Putin says China's leader will visit Moscow soon. This coming amid growing fears that China is helping Russia with weapons bound for Ukraine. Rich Johnson, USA News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
For the choice of the nation, our chieftain so brave and so true. We'll go for the great reformation, for Lincoln and liberty too.
But before Lincoln could go for the great reformation, for Lincoln and liberty too, he had to survive the state legislature in Illinois, where he served 8 years. He survived financially, partially because in 1837 he got his law license and began practicing law, and that helped him to pay off what he called the national debt, which he took very seriously. To get his first suit that he ever owned, he actually had to get an advance on what he was being paid to be in the legislature, which was initially about $200 a year. And he got an advance on that and bought his very first suit so he could turn up at the legislature in Vandalia, where it originally was, and look somewhat respectable. There were all kinds of challenges for a young politician in Vandalia and then in Springfield, even for somebody as bright as Abraham Lincoln. Toward the end of his service in the legislature, he got involved in a controversy with the state auditor, whose name was James Shields. He was an Irish immigrant. He had a very, very sharp temper. And he was a Democrat, and someone who was on the complete opposite side of everything is Lincoln, who was very much a Whig and very committed to the Whig Party. At one point, Lincoln said that any good man is always a good party man. He believed in the Whig Party. He believed in his pro-business position very much. But what happened was that he wrote a letter to the newspaper, and he wrote it in a sort of disguising himself to be some female about how awful and disgusting James Shields, the state auditor, was, about how he smelled bad and he couldn't dance and all the women were laughing at him. And then at the time, Lincoln was already courting Mary Todd, who later became his wife, and she actually wrote a third letter. And there were three letters in the local newspaper, and Shields was furious, and he went to the newspaper and demanded who wrote these letters, and someone said, Lincoln. So he confronted Lincoln publicly and challenged him to a duel.
And this was a great concern to Lincoln because Shields was known to be a crack shot. I mean, really a crack shot and someone who was expert with pistols. Lincoln did not like, I'm sorry, Second Amendment people, he did not like handling firearms. He had shot a wild turkey when he was a child, and he didn't like hunting. He didn't curse in public. He really didn't. He was careful about that. He didn't chew tobacco or smoke tobacco or drink at all. In fact, he spoke for the Women's Christian Temperance Union, or the predecessor for that organization, in Illinois. In any event, when Shields challenged him to a duel, apparently his first reaction was, "You're kidding, right?" And he said, no, dueling is legal. We just have to cross the river into Missouri, and dueling's legal there, and I expect you to meet me on the field of honor. So Lincoln was unsure what to do, and then he found out that the way these things went, if you were being challenged by someone else, you got to choose the weapons. So Shields was expecting some kinds of pistols, one kind of pistol or another. Lincoln kind of surprised him. He said, let's use cavalry broadswords for this duel. Now, these can be fairly lethal, but Lincoln, being a very clever guy, understood that when you have such a big height advantage and such long arms, Lincoln was 6'4", James Shields was 5'7", that's a pretty substantial height difference. In any event, they went ahead. They were supposed to stand back to back and then take their swords and then come at each other and try to kill each other. And when they turned around, Lincoln faced Shields, and he just reached above him, and he's a towering guy, you have to understand. And with his sword, he took the sword and then swung it and lopped off a limb of a tree, and it came falling down. And apparently, Shields saw what was going on here and saw that he was probably not going to do so well in a duel with swords and this much taller member of the legislature. And he said, okay, you think maybe we should call it a day? And Lincoln thought that was a very good idea. And they shook hands, and he survived. Politically, he also survived and, in fact, thrived. And his idea was to go to Congress, to follow his law partner who had been in Congress. And the difficulty, however, was that there were a bunch of other ambitious young Whigs. And Lincoln put himself forward as a candidate for Congress, was turned down, told to wait his turn. Second time, told to turn down and wait his turn. Then he went to Congress, but he went at exactly the most difficult time, a time of war, and a war that he opposed. Why? We'll tell you that and more on this special show, The Real Lincoln.
To purchase this special history program, The Real Lincoln, go to MedFitHistoryStore.com.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. President Trump's election year State of the Union address struck a different tone from his previous major speeches, an adjustment well-crafted to connect with shifts in the national mood. The president did not mention impeachment, never came across as aggrieved or defensive, instead exulting in real accomplishments of his first 3 years while honoring admirable Americans that his team had assembled in the galleries. This warmer, more optimistic approach reflected a remarkable Gallup poll showing increased confidence in the nation's direction. In rating the overall quality of life, a remarkable 84% called themselves satisfied, while, by a margin of 3-1, respondents felt satisfied at the opportunity for a president to get ahead by working hard. If the president continues to work hard himself to promote and reflect this sunny mood and steers clear of angry condemnation and complaint, he can help ensure his reelection and build a foundation for a successful second term. I'm Michael Medved.
One of the most surprising things about Abraham Lincoln's rise to the presidency is that he did not enjoy particularly good luck. In fact, quite the opposite. When he finally realized a long-standing dream and headed to Washington, D.C. as a member of the United States Congress after winning election in 1846, he arrived at exactly the wrong time. He arrived at a time when the Whigs had lost narrowly to President James K. Polk a little while before, and with the United States involved in the war against Mexico. And as an anti-slavery Whig, Lincoln, in fact, used part of his time in Congress to campaign to end the slave trade in the District of Columbia, to build internal improvements, but he also used it to oppose James K. Polk in the war against Mexico. It was a popular war. It was a very successful war. And Lincoln's opposition, he introduced what were called the spot resolutions. He wanted an investigation, full investigation of where the first shots in the war were fired. Were they fired in American territory, as President Polk said, or as Lincoln and many other Whigs suspected, were those first shots actually fired over in Mexican territory? In other words, were we involved in a righteous war or basically a land grab to get more space for more slave states like Texas? Because the annexation of Texas is one of the things that had just preceded the war. Anyway, it was not a popular position. Now, it's not true that Lincoln voted against appropriations for the troops in the field. When he ran for the U.S. Senate in 1858, that was used against him, and it wasn't true. He always voted for the appropriations. But he had taken this unpopular position against the war, and he didn't even attempt to win re-election to Congress. He basically retired from the field. Now, he had campaigned for Zachary Taylor, who was one of the heroes of the Mexican War, the Whig candidate in 1848, helped get him elected. And he campaigned in Massachusetts. He campaigned around the country as a congressman who was leaving office. And he expected he'd be rewarded with a plum position as head of the General Land Office. That would be like the Bureau of Land Management today. And he didn't get it. And instead they offered him to become governor of the Oregon Territory. This did not sound good at all. And one of the reasons it didn't sound good, he considered it, is because Oregon Territory was known to be a hotbed of Democrats, and there would be no future for a Whig like Lincoln.
You're listening to a special history program, The Real Lincoln, on The Michael Medved Show.
Okay, it's winter time, and that shouldn't stop you from going outdoors and enjoying yourself and getting some exercise. Relief Factor can help with that cause. Relief Factor is natural. It consists of fish oil and turmeric primarily and other ingredients that have been tested and shown to be remarkably effective. A Relief Factor can make you feel better and give you an opportunity to enjoy all kinds of aspects of an active life that you may have been prevented from enjoying in the past. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner. There's a special price available for what is called a quick start with Relief Factor. You take these tablets, which are entirely natural, no chemicals, no preservatives of any kind. This is a wonderful product that we heartily endorse. Go to michaelmedved.com, look for the banner for Relief Factor. We've all heard the saying, safety in numbers. Well, think again. The IRS, the country's powerful tax collection agency, is on a hiring spree. They're bringing in 87,000 new agents. Now, no taxpayer at any income level is entirely safe from IRS scrutiny or, worse, a dreaded IRS audit. This is Michael Medved for AmFed Coin and Bullion. How safe are your accumulated savings and wealth from government examination and reach? Owning gold and silver is one of the best ways to keep your wealth in your own hands. Precious metals provide a layer of privacy that's not available through a bank account. When you own precious metals, only you and your dealer have knowledge of your purchase. Now, I buy all of my precious metals from my friend Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. Nick's been in this industry for 41 years, and he has established a reputation built on trust, transparency, integrity, and fair pricing. Call Nick and his team, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-Reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You're listening to a special history program, The Real Lincoln, on The Michael Medved Show.
Hurrah for the choice of the nation.
So he went back to Springfield and began practicing law. He got some pretty good clients, as a matter of fact. He had, by this time, soon thereafter, a new partner, a young man named William Herndon, who later became his closest friend and later his biographer. But one of the things that... Don Fehrenbacher, who wrote a terrific book, it's called Prelude to Greatness, Lincoln in the 1850s. And it's a classic book about Lincoln's preparations for his rise. He did not quit on politics. He basically was biding his time. And the way it's often told is, well, when the slavery issue came back again with the Kansas-Nebraska Act, then he, because of idealism alone, came back into the race. Now, he had a long and passionate commitment against slavery, but it was much more than that. He also had personal ambition. And what happened is when this agitation began and the Whig Party began to fall apart and this new Republican Party came into being, this was one of the opportunities that he seized. He was fairly late in joining the Republicans and leaving the Whigs, but when the Whigs collapsed altogether and there was a Republican convention, he spoke at that convention in Bloomington, Illinois, and he gave a speech that is called his Great Law Speech. And it electrified everyone who was there. In fact, so much so that the people who were supposed to be writing it down forgot, and people were crying and cheering. We still don't know exactly what he said in this Great Law Speech, but people who described it said it was one of the most remarkable things they'd ever heard. And after that Great Law Speech, he ran for the legislature again, got elected, but then promptly resigned his old legislative seat to run for the United States Senate. And this was partially because the Republicans had an excellent chance, much better than the Whigs did, of taking over the state legislature. And in those days, the U.S. senator was elected by the state legislature. The problem was that it was complicated, all the divisions. One of his opponents for the U.S. Senate, and he was originally the front runner, was James Shields, the same guy he had fought in the duel. But they both lost. It ended up going to an anti-slavery Democrat named Lyman Trumbull, who later became Lincoln's great ally. Even though he didn't win in the Senate, his name was put forward in 1856. First time they ran a Republican candidate for president, they put forward Lincoln's name as a vice presidential candidate. Why? Because Illinois was considered one of those key states that the Republicans had to win if they had any chance of winning the presidency, and Lincoln was a favorite son of Illinois. He didn't get that nomination. But the man of the hour, the fellow who had provoked so much of the re-eruption of the slavery issue, was Stephen Arnold Douglas. And he was referred to as Stephen Benedict Arnold Douglas by people in his home state of Illinois. He had reopened the whole debate about slavery with the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And Lincoln was the obvious one to run against Douglas, who was the senator from Illinois. He had been almost the Democratic nominee for president in 1852 and then again in 1856. And everyone knew he would get the Democratic presidential nomination in 1860. So running against such a prominent person was a very big deal. Douglas was an amazing guy. And he was, they used to say Douglas was 5'4", Lincoln was 6'4". Douglas was called the Little Giant when Lincoln was running against him for Senate. They called him Abe the Giant Killer. Well, actually, Douglas was probably closer to 5 feet. He was very, very short. But he had a huge booming voice and lots of pretensions. He traveled around in his own private rail car, and they had a little cannon behind the caboose in which he traveled. It was all elegant and well, and the cannon was dragged along as so that they would fire it whenever he would come to a town, so people would know that the great man was there. Lincoln told the great man, well, okay, let's debate. Now, no one had done this before. But the 7 debates in which they engaged, 3 hours each, by the way, with no interruptions or commercials, that changed American history in the course of Lincoln's life. I'll tell you how, coming up.
You're listening to a special history program, The Real Lincoln, on The Michael Medved Show.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of The Michael Medved Show. For more history programs, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com or become a Medhead at MichaelMedved.com and check out our new history podcast for premium members called In Light of History.
We'll go for the Great Reformation, for Lincoln and Liberty too. We'll go for the boy from Kentucky, the hero of Hoosierdom through. Pride of the suckers, so lucky for Lincoln and Liberty.
And for Lincoln and Liberty, too. Lincoln launched his campaign for the U.S. Senate against Stephen Douglas, and it was known to be a very much an uphill campaign with one of the most famous speeches in American political history. He launched the campaign by saying, "A house divided against itself cannot stand," quoting the Bible, of course. Then he said, "I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. I do not expect the Union to be dissolved. I do not expect the House to fall. But I do expect it will cease to be divided. It will become all one thing or all the other. Either the opponents of slavery will arrest the further spread of it and place it where the public mind shall rest in the belief that it is in the course of ultimate extinction, or its advocates will push it forward till it shall become alike lawful in all the states, old as well as new, north as well as south." 7 debates with Douglas. 3 hours each. The way these debates worked, and Douglas was foolhardy to agree to it, he knew Lincoln was formidable. Lincoln had contempt for Douglas. Douglas was frightened of Lincoln. The debates worked that the opening speaker spoke for an hour, uninterrupted. Then the second speaker had an hour and a half. Then the original opening speaker concluded with another half hour. They spoke to crowds of up to 30,000 people. Most of the crowds were above 20,000 people. This is in 7 small towns throughout Illinois. The substance of the debates changed American history, and it made Lincoln a national sensation. Yes, he lost. He won more votes in the end than Douglas by just a few thousand votes statewide. He won by about 5,000 votes with more votes than Douglas, but because the legislature had been gerrymandered by Democrats, Douglas got reelected. Lincoln lost his Senate seat, and then he commented that, well, he would now fade away from politics. He had lost for the Senate the second time, hadn't gotten the vice presidency, had the one term in Congress. But he had become an inspiration to those people in the country who saw slavery as a profound moral issue. And with Stephen Douglas as the certain Democratic candidate for president, the beginning of a campaign for Lincoln and liberty, for making Abraham Lincoln the next president of the United States, began in earnest. It was all based on the power of words. His words at the debates, his words of his speeches, including the great lost speech, and the speeches that were to come. Remaining question? Given his background and given his limitations in education and military experience, how did he become one of the greatest war leaders in the history of the planet? That is part of the story and part of the inspiration to be taken from this account of the real Lincoln, who benefited so greatly this greatest nation on God's green earth.
To purchase this special history program, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. As the presidential campaign heats up, leaders over 70 control our politics. If Trump wins re-election, he'd be 78 at his term's end, the oldest president ever. Elizabeth Warren would be 75. Joe Biden and Michael Bloomberg would both be 81. And Bernie Sanders, well, he'd hit 83. Meanwhile, Speaker of the House Pelosi is already 79, and Senate Leader McConnell, 77. New York Attorney Thomas Dewey notes this domination by senior citizens is something new. Bill Clinton took office at age 46 and George W. Bush followed him at 54, beating the 52-year-old Vice President Al Gore. Mr. Dewey seems puzzled by these contrasts, but they actually reflect the unshakable domination of government and culture by baby boomers who ruled the roost in their 50s and still hold sway in their 70s. Members of this post-war population bulge could still reign past their 80s, or more plausibly, 2020 will be their last hurrah. I'm Michael Medved.
How much pain is too much pain? General muscle aches and pains from getting older, exercise, and everyday living can be frustrating. Is $19.95 too much to spend to see if you can get out of pain? This is why Relief Factor is doing so well across our great country. Pete and Seth Talbot decided to discount their cost of a 3-week quick start to only $19.95. That's less than the average cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. $19.95 might be the best investment you make in 2020. Call 833-654-PAIN or go to michaelmedved.com.
Business books are the ultimate marketing tools that differentiate companies, professionals, entrepreneurs, doctors, and dentists from the competition, but it takes too much time and frustration to write and publish a book all on your own. That's where my friend, New York Times bestselling author Michael Levin comes in. He runs a writing firm that prepares the highest quality ghost-written business books quickly and affordably. Michael and his team are responsible for over 700 books, including two New York Times bestsellers. For more information, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and click on the banner for Writing Help. That's Writing Help at Michael.
Hi, Fred Dwyer here. If you suffer from a serious chronic illness, heartburn, poor sleep, fatigue, brain fog, you need Balance 7. Balance 7 water improves the acid-alkaline balance in the body. The right pH helps unlock the immune system. It also allows for better hydration and nourishment during times of medication and stress. Balance 7 works. I know. I use it every day. Now you can try it free. Balance 7 is offering chronic illness sufferers a free gallon of Balance 7 water for the first 100 callers. That's an $87 value free. So call 800-793-9039 and mention my name, Fred. The first 100 callers suffering with a chronic illness get a free gallon of Balance 7 water. So call 800-793-9039, code word Fred, or visit balance7.com. That's balance, the number 7.com. 800-793-9039, code word Fred.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.